Welcome to the Chirpin' Birds podcast. We're back after a couple weeks off, and we're ready for the draft. This will be our draft preview, as the draft is a week and a half away. There's some news that happened over the last few weeks we'll briefly touch on, and get into our first round Eagles draft preview. Before we get started, Mike, how you doing?
I'm doing well. I don't know how the weather has been where you're at. Obviously, it's better than here on the East Coast, but we're starting to finally turn the page from a pretty crummy end of winter to starting to get some regular spring weather, getting reacquainted with the draft. We got the end of the NBA season, got the beginning of the MLB season, so it's really starting to feel like spring, and that's pretty nice in my book.
Yeah, it's been mostly the same in LA. There were 2 days this past week that went into the low 80s, but otherwise it's kind of been in the 60s. So it's almost spring, a couple days, or it is spring. It's almost feeling like summer, but mostly spring. It's coming back into the cooler. It's a bit overcast today. 60 degrees, so not quite there yet here either, but we're getting there. Any thoughts on the Phillies City Connects? Certainly didn't help them much last night.
I was holding out to see what they looked like on the field, and I don't think that really moved me at all. I think, at least for me, like, I'm not trying to say, like, I think it's bad, therefore it is bad by definition, but, like, it's just not for me. I think the connection is true by the book. Like, there is literal connection between the jerseys and the city's flag, but I don't think, at least for me personally, it didn't reach the connection in spirit. It kind of just feels off-brand. Like, it doesn't feel like the Phillies. It doesn't feel like it's something that's uniquely iconic Philly. And I get that, like, that's a tough assignment. I'll be the first one to say that, like, I don't know what I would have done, but I know that I wouldn't have done that. So, you know, I like that they're doing that. I feel like MLB has traditionally been very conservative when it comes to jerseys, so I don't want to squelch the creativity, but for this round, I was not excited, or it didn't get me, like, itching for one of those jerseys. How about yourself?
I did like the hats. I think the black pants are different enough that I like it. It's a unique look, but as far as the jerseys go, the font, the ode to the Declaration, but it kind of looks like lightning bolts. I didn't think that the jersey itself worked, but the hat I thought was fine. I mean, it's mostly blue, which is a different blue than, like, normal Phillies blue, but I like the hats. I don't have anything against the black pants, but I think the jerseys were just, like, okay to me. It reminds me a lot of the Union. Mm-hmm. And so I sort of feel like the Union colors are more representative of the city flag than having to do another jersey for another team that's the same thing. But I'm not really sure how it works. Like, we are one of the teams that gets them this year, but once every team has one. I wonder if they're going to do the cycle again and we'll get a new one in like 3 years. But I don't know, 12 out of 62 games wearing them, I think it's just fine. They made a big deal about it because it's the first game, but I feel like it's just going to kind of be like, oh, they're wearing those jerseys today, and it's not going to be that much of a big deal. So I did like the getaway Reds. Getting rid of that feels like one too many jerseys, especially with the City Connect this year. But if they sort of did away with the City Connect and went back to the getaway red jerseys, I wouldn't be upset.
Yeah, it is kind of funny to juxtapose this with the Kelly Green jerseys. And I know that the Kelly Green jerseys aren't like the same assignment of like a unique original jersey that ties back to the city, but like we know that fans just love old stuff, so like if that was a possibility, like I just think that there's like such a rich history of uniforms over the team's history, like I would have much been in favor of them going back to a prior jersey, you know, before like the powder blues. Like everybody loves nostalgia. It's such an old organization. I just feel like it could have really like it could have really delivered some like really cool old looking stuff that like I think the city would have like swarmed for. But I also know that like that's not quite what a City Connect is. I just, you know, I would have liked something more vintage or retro, or even something inspired by one of those could have been really cool. But I'm also in favor generally of coming up with something new. It's just this attempt for me was just a little bit, not sloppy, but like it just kind of felt like they were kind of taking homage of like some different things that didn't really have the same connective thread, like the flag, the city's flag, and then the script from the Constitution, which for me like didn't read like, not even like the pun read, but like it didn't like read clearly as an ode to that. So I think they're fine, but like overall a little disappointed, but maybe it'll grow on me, who knows.
The Richie Ashburn Phillies jersey would have been cool, but I also think those jerseys are sort of too similar to the current. It would look like a throwback, but the Phillies with the white like home jerseys might be a little too similar. Mm-hmm. The P from like I don't know 1920 or whenever it was, like that would have been cool. I think the team store did like a hat series last year or 2 years ago where they released like the hats from different eras, like the 1913 hat, a 1941 hat, a 60s hat. So a lot of them are just like the P is different. I don't know if they can mess with like the style of jersey, because they're all, I guess, fanatics or whatever they are. So I don't know. It's tough to imagine a retro jersey, since they already did the powder blue, since those are so different. But maybe something with the Twins or whatever the mascots were before the Fanatic. I forget what their names are, but maybe something like that as a retro thing. But I agree with you that the city element of it, I think, is more like what the Nationals one was, the rose blossom or cherry blossom trees. So I thought that was like nice. Yeah, but
like stuff like that, like it's tough.
They didn't stand out
to compare, because you don't know, like if you're from DC and like you've lived there, like how much of an eye roll is like, oh yeah, like here we go with the cherry blossoms again. Like it's tough to gauge what a fan of that city like feels like. Is that like a nice touch or a nuance, or like you just see them all the time? I don't know if that's the case. I imagine, like obviously for Philly it's like cheesesteaks and Rocky and stuff like that, So it's like, you know, like this when the Sixers did like the Rocky like gray jerseys, like I mean those just look like jumpsuits. But we'll wrap on this
Yeah.
because we got a lot to get into. If you could only pick one city jersey, would it be the new ones for the Phillies? Which what are people even calling them? Like shorthand. Like I know it's the City Connect jerseys, but like the Philly jerseys they just released like are the blank.
I think they're just the City Connects.
Yeah, but like, you know, 10 years from now, what are we gonna be calling them? You know what I mean? Like what are...
The 2024 City
All right.
Connect.
Well, you'll get to my point now. Those are like the Boathouse Row Sixers jerseys.
Yeah, I think I have more affinity towards Boathouse Row as like a view of the city than script and color of the flag. That would have been good if they did it based on a place, but I feel like if they did City Hall, it's like the cream
Yeah, I
jerseys.
mean
I
the
mean,
Sixers'
City Hall
most
is
recent
like
one was
cream
like Reg
colored, I
Terminal, and I
suppose.
thought that
So.
was like a much better one than Boathouse Row,
Yeah.
because like there's also like the weird, it's not like irony, but like it's kind of weird where like the photo shoot is like all the players like kind of posing with like oars and boats, and it's like you're a basketball player. Like I know that it's like an iconic view, but like I don't really think of like rowing as like an iconic like Philly connection. Like
They
I
could
know
have
the
done a tan
schools.
jersey
Yeah.
with the art museum. Art museum brick color.
Yeah. All right. That's plenty of jersey
With
talk.
like stair steps.
I
Okay.
think,
Jersey
you know.
talk. Jersey talk on a for the Eagles who have, I guess they have four jerseys now. Home, road, black, Kelly green. Black pants. They have extra pants. All right. So some of the news we missed between the last recording and this one, the biggest being Eagles trading Hassan Reddick to the Jets for a conditional third round pick that could be a second based on snaps and production, I believe. I think he needs, oh yeah, it's 2/3 playing time and 10 or more sacks. So we'll be cheering for Hassan Reddick in New York to improve that pick. Probably will be a late round, whether it's second or third, given Rodgers' return and the Jets adding a lot of talent.
That's actually not correct because it's a 2026 third round pick. So
Ah,
and
right.
I think that is strategic. Like on the one hand, it is a further away pick. It's not this upcoming draft, and it's not next year's draft. It's the draft after that. So the conditions will be this upcoming season, but the pick that will convey is 2026. So I think the Eagles get a lackluster return here. I'd say overall now there is potential that it could upgrade to a second round pick if Reddick meets those thresholds. But I do think since it's further in the future and this will almost certainly be after Rodgers has gone on to retire, I think that's kind of like the silver lining. So I do think that pick could
Right.
be higher and it could be a second round pick. It's good to know that it's not going to be a 2025 draft pick though. So
So Rodgers is 40. He'll turn 41 in December.
and he's coming off a very serious
So,
injury, so
right. So if he plays another year or two, he'll then be 41 next year, 42 the year after, so.
yeah. So,
I guess, yeah, I think it is disappointing, especially given how talented Reddick is and the inability to keep him. It seems like it was just a cap issue, but for a team in the window they're in now, it felt a little giving him away for no reason, you know, not wanting to make it work, but who knows how he would have played as a lame duck type player. I mean, we sort of talked about that last time on, you know, him coming to training camp and like what that will look like and all that, but I don't know, it's a little disappointing to let one of, if not the best player on your defense, go. They'll be a worse defense this year because of this.
Right.
But, you know, that's the silver lining. If you want to make one out of it, is that pick would be a bit higher because of the Rodgers situation. So
yeah, I think
farewell to Hassan.
Yeah, it is a bummer. He had two very good years with the Eagles. It is a bummer that they couldn't reach an agreement. I do see where the Eagles like stand on it. They don't want to give Reddick a long-term extension that he honestly deserves. Now, on the other side of this, Reddick hasn't reached an extension with his new team yet. So that's something that I'll keep an eye on, like, whenever, or like, I'm assuming that the trade is like in good faith, Joe Douglas will extend Reddick at some point. I don't think that trade happens without that, but I'll be really interested to see what he commands, whether it happens before this season or after the season's over and he tests free agency. Like, it always seems like when a situation like this gets to this point, that it's like, you got to trade me because we won't reach a resolution. And then when you get traded, it's like that kind of like resets, and it's like, all right, like, now I'm going to get that, but like, I'll play on this deal. Or is like, will he play on this deal, the last year of the deal for the Jets, or is the deal going to happen before the season starts? So that's something. Like, likely the Eagles just thought it wasn't good business to extend him, and I think that's reasonable, but I am a little bit curious why they couldn't wait until after the draft to see if they could get a little bit more out of either of the Jets, or see if another team swoops in once they don't get the guy in the draft they were hoping for. Now we'll get into like what this incoming draft class looks like generally, but also for edge rushers, because I do think, even though the Eagles have a new edge rusher in Bryce Huff, and they drafted one in the first round last year, Nolan Smith, like, now that and they did bring back Josh Sweat on a one-year deal, like, I think that that's still going to be a need, even though they drafted one in the first round last year, and they did make a big money deal with Bryce Huff. But obviously there's a lot in flux. I'm mostly just kind of bummed that A, they're losing a really good player, but also like a guy who's like from here, from Temple, from Camden, like this was him playing in his own backyard. Like, you could tell that he really enjoyed playing for the Eagles, and I think he was obviously a great player for the 2 years that he was here. So it kind of stinks that they weren't
able to
make it happen.
What do you think about, like, Jeff McClain, I believe, reported that some sources were suggesting that he was
hunting for sacks.
Chasing sacks and chasing stats, and the fact that he, you know, when he left Arizona, he was in Carolina for a year or two, didn't get the extension. You know, went to where'd he go to? Or he didn't get the extension in Arizona, then went to Carolina, then I think he went to one other team before the Eagles.
Yeah, he came to Philly after that.
Okay. Cardinals, well, Panthers. Either way, like he seems to have played. since leaving Arizona, now he's gone through two teams without getting an extension, or three teams if you count Arizona.
I don't think that's completely fair. Like, the Eagles gave him a 3-year, $45 million deal. That's a decent free agency contract, and I think he's outplayed that. It's unfortunate that he made a 3-year deal and, like, didn't, like, in retrospect, if he could have it his way, I'm sure that he would have loved to make a 1-year deal with the Eagles and then cash in on that and got that extension when he was a little bit younger. But as far as, like, the chasing sacks versus, like, staying to assignment, like, I'll be honest, I don't watch closely enough to even know what that would look like. And it kind of smells of, like, organization trying to soften the blow of a disappointing trade, maybe there's some truth to it, but I also think there's, like, a little bit of fan service to it, or, like, an organization trying to cope with a tough decision they had to make. Like, it's probably somewhere in the middle, but it's nothing that, like, makes me feel better, or, like, doesn't help me rationalize the disappointment. How about you?
Yeah, I don't know. Like, from one report, I wouldn't take that as what happened. It's interesting because of how I've never seen anything like this, how the whole team imploded and there's not one, like, locker room story, really. There was, I think, Fletcher Cox and Lane Johnson had some comments, without getting into specifics, about people not wanting it enough or working hard enough or whatever it was. Mm-hmm. But all the players that were perceived as more outspoken through the end of the season were speaking very positively about the coach and the locker room, and, you know, they're all sort of one perspective, that it's a great place to play, and the coach, you know, they want to play for the coach and all those things. So I don't think that if the culture was that bad that there would be this unified message coming out of it, and one source could have been, like, a biased or just, like, hyperbolic, mm-hmm, to some extent. So I'd be curious if more comes out, but I don't know that it will at this point, because after the draft you kind of have the dog days of the off season, and then you get into training camp, and I think the stories will be like Nick is has a different philosophy as far as going into the season and practicing harder and that kind of thing. So I don't know that there will be tension in player leaks and stuff after training camp starts and that kind of thing, but I can see that being a potential issue, or if there's leftover stuff from last season at coming out in training camp, maybe there will be a quote or two that a player let slip, something like last year. You know, I'm sure Nick will be asked a number of questions along the lines of what are you doing differently this year to make sure last year doesn't happen again, and those kind of things. So I don't think we're out of the woods necessarily, but it has really stuck out to me that the team has not, the team has been unified in their reflections on the locker room, the culture, and the coach. So we'll see. As with all things Eagles, we'll just have to see.
Right.
The Eagles extend Reed Blankenship on a 1-year contract extension. I think that puts them out of the potential Justin Simmons running. I wouldn't put it past them to draft a safety in a later round as to supplement that as just insurance, but unless Justin Simmons like agrees to a very inexpensive 1-year deal or something like that, I would imagine our starting safeties to be Reed Blankenship and CJ Gardner-Johnson.
Yeah, and just
Reed seemed very happy to stay here.
Yeah, no, I do like Reed. I know that he kind of took some flack last year just because I think the secondary was rather shorthanded and they took a step back collectively, but he also had some like injury concerns, so I'm hoping that he can take a step in the right direction health-wise, but I think he's been a real diamond in the rough for them. Like, he was an undrafted free agent. He wasn't even like a flashy signing, and I think he's quietly became one of the better finds they've had probably like over the last 5 years. And then just to note on like the 1-year extension, what it basically comes down to is at the end of this season he was going to become a restricted free agent, and basically what this deal is now, they've bought that out. So he was going to be a restricted free agent next year, now he's not, so he's not going to be here a year longer than expected, but now he's like confirmed going to be here for a second year. So I think it's good for him in that he gets a bump in salary because of some like the players union has some sort of salary accelerator when a player drafted at a certain slot, or if they're undrafted play a certain amount of snaps, you get the requisite raise based on your amount of snaps or production, and now he gets the guaranteed money up front. So nice little bump for Reed. And yeah, I agree. I think he and CJ GJ, and unless something happens in the draft to shake that up, like, they're going to be the starters this year, and I think I wouldn't be surprised if that would go on for the year after. But maybe once Sidney Brown comes back, you know, he's coming off a serious injury too. I think maybe he, like, I don't know. We didn't really get to see too much from Sidney Brown. Like, we got to see him kind of like in some backup duty, but we haven't really seen him like thrust into a spot of importance aside from needing to step up for injuries. So I think he's another name to throw in that hat.
The Eagles are bringing back Avante Maddox on a 1-year deal. I don't think that was too surprising. He was released. There was no news. It seemed like he would be back on a different deal given his injury.
I think he took a visit with the Saints. But, yeah.
Oh, I didn't see that.
There was no, like, real hot market for him, it seemed. But yeah, I think,
given the injury history, I think this makes a lot of sense, and he's an important player to the Eagles, but not very durable, and, you know, has missed multiple times. It seems like every year he's out, comes back, is out, comes back, so He did get that nice deal a few years ago and has played up to it in the games he has played, but just given the time missed, I think it made a lot of sense that they would cut him and bring him back on a different deal.
But also for him, it feels nice, like nice to have the injuries like haven't been, correct me if I'm wrong, but like the injuries don't really seem to be like a pattern of like soft tissue, like nagging, like stuff. It's like he kind of like fell the wrong way and like had like a pec injury, and then like he had the really serious like injury in Green Bay when Sendejo just like took his head off. Like, I think on one hand he has found himself injured, but like they don't seem like the type of injuries that make me think like he's injury prone. It kind of reminds me of like Joel Embiid, where it's just like, man, he just has terrible injury luck.
Yeah, I mean, I think Carson Wentz was kind of like that. Like he had the knee, he had the concussion, he had the
Yeah,
back.
but and I'm not disagreeing with you here, but like some of that was due in part to his play style. Like he was one to just kind of get as many yards as he could. He wasn't going to like slide or like dip out of bounds. Like he was
Well,
going to.
Matt Maddox is a small nickel corner that has to tackle tight ends and big receivers. Like he's in a by nature of his size and position, he's hitting a lot bigger players than him. He had the turf toe issue against Dallas. He had the torn pec, he had the concussion. It has been a lot of different things, but it just seems like it doesn't really matter because he's if he misses time, then it doesn't really matter if it's the same injury or not.
Yeah, I'll be curious to
So
see what. So, like, I think given that he was cut, he didn't really have a market. Like, by no means is he the presumed nickel cornerback. I think he's certainly got a chance to ultimately win it. Like, I'm curious what the Isaiah Rodgers, Avante Maddox, like, camp battle will look like, or if there's, like, one with a strong lead. I imagine Maddox would probably have the pretty strong edge just in like the building, considering he was drafted by the team. He has a lot of experience with the defensive teammates. Obviously, it's the new defensive coach, so maybe it's not as much as it would be otherwise, but obviously the draft is, less than 2 weeks away. I think that's probably a position they'll look to get a guy or two, whether it's somebody who can do inside, outside, or play inside. The one thing I also wanted to mention, this is like a slight detour, but because I mentioned Isaiah Rodgers, who has some return ability, I think somewhere in the mix, and I don't know if it happened before our last podcast or between this one and the last, but like the NFL's new kickoff rules. Give me your thoughts on that quickly. Like the new AFL, I think, style of.
Yeah, I think it's good in that there will be more action. The biggest thing that stood out to me was only I think 20% of returns in a game, or 2 out of 10 returns per game on average, like happen. 8 out of 10 are touchbacks, so it does it. Improve the action on, it makes special teams a lot more important. I think for the last few years, it's sort of felt like one, the Eagles haven't really had a good punter, they haven't had a good return person. The only exciting things was like Jake Elliott hitting 50 plus yard field goals. So I think it adds more action and it's going to be more entertaining. If it helps with safety and health, then that's great. I don't really have much of an argument to not make a change. I think it'll be pretty weird the first few weeks and then we'll just kind of get used to it, but it does seem like there's just kind of like no reason to keep it the way it is for the 5% or less chance that there's a return. And even so, like the long punt returns or a kickoff return aren't as exciting as I feel like they used to be. And maybe it's just because most kickoffs are boring. But I kind of like it. I like that the strategy will be more like a run play than special teams. So I'm not I wasn't advocating for it, but now that it's here, I'm sort of like, great.
Yeah, I'm really intrigued to see what the Eagles do at kickoff returner now. Like, I don't remember last time we had one, like a returner that was like, oh yeah, we're like, it seems like the Eagles had a really tough luck finding a guy who could get it past the 20. But now with the new rules, like, and we've already seen teams like, I forget, it was probably like the second week of free agency that that rule passed at the league meetings. And then we started to see teams make specific signings of like guys who will be like the specialist designated. Like, we've always had kickoff returners, but like a new mold or a new effort of signing a guy specifically with the new rules in mind. Like, guys that are a little bit more physical, kind of more of a not as slender as your typical kickoff guy, because now, to your point, it'll be more like a run play than a traditional special teams play. Like, and I think that there's going to be more like designed plays and, you know, even just kind of like end around type like fake plays, I think will be fun. But like right now, if you had a guess, like, who would you say is on the short list of Eagles to be the kickoff returners? I think Isaiah Rodgers, like, I think he's one we could put on the list, but who else comes to mind?
Well, Covey.
Yeah, I maybe. I do think he's just too small, and you probably you don't want, like, he's your punt returner. Maybe they think he can handle that amount of hits on a game day. I'm not sure. Now Boston Scott, he's still unsigned. He's not with Eagles currently. Anybody else?
I mean, he doesn't solve your small issue.
Well, yeah, he's not even with the team, is what I'm saying. He's been the guy that they've used as the kickoff returner in past. That's the only reason I bring him up. And
Yeah, I don't
there's Kenny
know. It'll
Gainwell.
be
I don't know if he's got the right skill set for it. I don't think they really have the guy, like, unless it is Rodgers. I know he's more, he's got the burst. I think even in like, if this change didn't happen, I think he would be the likely kickoff returner. But I also wouldn't be surprised if they go out and like make a specific like undrafted free agent decision on this type of build, because I don't know if it's a guy that, you know, if he is a, if you draft somebody at a position of need and you know that he has like returnability, cool. But yeah, I think that's another thing in this upcoming draft, that like there's going to be this added emphasis of like, oh, is he going to be like somebody who could be a playmaker on kickoffs more so than we've ever thought of?
Eagles agree to 3-year contract extension with Jordan Mailata. He had 2 years left on his deal. 3 added years will total $66 million,
Yeah.
with 48 guaranteed.
Good business. I'm glad.
One of the best left tackles in the league. I think he was 7th on PFF, if you like PFF. So, congrats to him. And it's a wild story, which has been talked about often, and it's nice that we go from Jason Peters to Jordan Mailata, and we don't really have to worry about left tackle for quite some time now. So
Yeah.
that's good, and we'll sort of look to right tackle and Lane's heir apparent in the draft this year.
Yeah, the left side of
But
your offensive line is locked up for the foreseeable future, in Mailata and Dickerson. And then, like, I know Dickerson got a top of market deal before free agency hits. Like, generally speaking, that was good business. The Mailata extension is like really good business, because we know that this cap's going up every year. To get a 3-year extension on a deal that has 2 years left, like, that's really getting out ahead of it. And I think Mailata has been quite dependable. He hasn't been like the top five tackle in a league just yet, but like he's been nothing but like solid and steady. So I think this is really good business. And yeah, I mean, you really can't underscore how crazy of a story his career has been. So glad that he'll be around for quite a while now.
And the most recent bit of news as we end this section of the episode, Eagles signed tight end CJ Uzomah to a 1-year contract. I think that's
Yeah, it smells of
a nice addition and tight end insurance, considering they lose Jack Stoll and they just have Albert O to back up Dallas Goedert and Tyree Jackson if he's still around, but
Yeah.
I think the ship has sailed on Tyree, unfortunately. So CJ Uzomah, former Brown, former Bengal, I think,
Yeah.
and former Jet.
Kind of just reminds me of like the Dan Arnold signing like from last year. It's like, oh, interesting. And then like it just doesn't matter. Like he doesn't make the team. Not to say that he won't make the team, but I think it's a signing with the draft in mind. So like if they don't get a guy or if like the position moves by them, like they don't have to like panic and they already got a guy. So I think it doesn't really move the needle, but I think it's nice depth if they need it at some point.
All right, let's get into the draft here. Eagles have the 22nd overall pick in the first round. 2 seconds, 50 and 53, a fourth, 3 fifths, and a sixth. Looks like that's 8 total picks. Those last 3 picks, 2 fifths and a sixth, are comp picks from, I believe, Steichen and Gannon leaving. And Hargrave, maybe? One, two, three.
They're not from Steichen and Gannon. Those
Don't
are
they get comp picks for that?
no, only if you're a minority head coach.
Okay. Well,
I think let's see.
Hargrave, Gardner Johnson, maybe?
Yeah, so they traded the one for Hargrave. I think that was swapped in the Kenny Pickett trade. And that's when they now have the fourth round from Pittsburgh. So that would have been one of them, the Hargrave. I think that there's the Dillard one in there, the Seumalo one, and I think there's another one that I'm just forgetting. Maybe T.J. Edwards. I think somewhere in that crowd. I guess let's talk about kind of generally the positions of need for the Eagles and like through the lens of number 22. Like I think they have 8 picks. I would imagine that they're probably going to make like 5 or 6 selections if they want to move up at some point on maybe like day 2 or day 3. So let's talk what are the positions that we think the Eagles will be targeting through the lens of pick number 22, but you can also kind of include pick number 50 and 53 too, but to a lesser extent.
So, of the positions, I think they would draft in the first round with a first round pick and positions of need. My top three, and it could be four depending how you view it, but offensive line, if you want to split that into guard and tackle, then that's two. I would say the more immediate would be guard. So I would say number one's guard, number two's tackle. I would say my next position of need is edge and then corner.
Okay, interesting. So I have tackle and guard split. I am starting with offensive tackle. we obviously just talked about Jordan. So he, that spot's good, and you know, Lane's still around. But I think that specifically this draft is a really good draft for tackles. And then there's a few guys who long term could play at tackle, but in the short term could play inside at guard. So I do think that there's like three guys who have that guard tackle versatility, but you would be making that pick knowing that, you know, if Lane only plays for two more years, that this would be the person slotting in at right tackle, but in the interim could at the very least compete for right guard with the hopes that you could upgrade over Tyler Steen. So tackle first, and cornerback second. You know, I think collectively the cornerbacks took a step back last year. I thought Slay was, you know, decent, good to decent, but we know Bradbury took a pretty unfortunate step back. There is Keely Ringo. I think he should at least compete for the starting spot opposite Slay, but, you know, you want to go in with competition there, and I think if you're picking in the first round pick at cornerback, the hopes would be that they would be able to get that second starting spot. And also knowing that, like, you know, Slay's getting up there in age, you do want a cornerback, like, cornerstone moving forward. My third spot is edge, so Reddick's gone, so it's on a one-year deal. Graham's retiring. They have Nolan Smith. We didn't really get to see a whole lot of Nolan last year. I still have hope for him, and I think he could be a guy, but, you know, we know the emphasis the Eagles put on attacking the quarterback, and I feel like they're pretty good at defensive tackle. That's like way down my list. And then my fourth one is right guard. You know, who knows what the team's mood on Steen is. Steen wasn't able to jump Sua Peta last year, so I think that spot's kind of open. But the juxtaposition of like tackle of the future and right guard, I would say that tackle is the more important thing. I think we shouldn't be looking at pick number 22 as like filling an immediate need, and should be looking at that pick as like looking at it like it is like a Lane Johnson or a Jason Kelce, which I know he wasn't drafted high, but you know, look at the arc of a career as an Eagle rather than the short term future. Because I think if you draft on need short term, especially at a position like that, like that could hamstring you in like 2030. So yeah, that's my short list. I don't know how much further you went from there, but I'll say after guard I have linebacker, but that's kind of like an evergreen position of need. Who knows if the Eagles will like take a swing. I don't think it'll happen in the first round. Like, that just won't happen. I think we can say that. But, like, would they make a commitment on something in the second round? Like, that still would surprise me. After linebacker, wide receiver, I could see them making a pick at this position in the second round. They just kind of need a quality third wide receiver, or a guy who could step up if one of Devontae or A.J. Brown is hurt. Like, we saw last year how one-dimensional the offense is when one of those guys is hurt. Any positions you want to take note of a little bit further down your list?
No, I mean, I have defensive tackle. Mm-hmm. I have a couple names there, but
okay.
I don't think that they'll use a first round pick on that.
Okay. And then before we start talking specific players, so the draft 12 days out, what's your kind of current sense of like the draft generally speaking? Like, we know that there's going to be some quarterbacks going up high in the first round. I think that'll benefit the Eagles and pushing down some guys of interest, but like, kind of, I don't know, are there any like broad brushes of this draft that you have since you've dug in?
Not really. I think every year there's a lot of buzz on, oh, all the top 3, 4, or 5 quarterbacks are going to go in the top 10, and then like 2 go, and then one's like in the top 15, and then the fourth one's like late first, early second. So I'm not sure. I know there are quarterback needy teams like the Vikings. I think it's not too surprising that a lot of people predict them to trade up, whether it's for McCarthy or May. And they, I think, only have, what, Sam Darnold, I think, on their staff, and maybe who was on the former Eagle. That was their backup, Nick Mullins. Mm-hmm. I don't know if he's still there or not. That's sort of like the big question. I think wherever Marvin Harrison Jr. goes, I think New England was the favorite at the moment. I don't really have much of a read as far as around the league. Like last year, the Eagles had a top 10 pick, so, or a top 12 or whatever it was. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, and they ended up trading up to 10 for Jalen Carter. So it was like the mock drafts were sort of a bigger for the Eagles last year. But since the Eagles have 22, I mean, I sort of have been looking in the 15 to 25, 26 range. Mm-hmm. And I think the thing that stood out to me is that there's a lot of potential, at least offensive linemen and edge rushers that fall in that area as far as draft prospect rankings go. Mm-hmm. I haven't seen too many mock drafts just yet. We might be a little too early for like the serious mock drafts, but as far as like Dane Brugler's perspective, which we always use in our draft previews, I think he has a lot of higher rankings for some and lower rankings for others. So he's sort of interesting compared to like the Field Yates and the Mel Kiper and Daniel Jeremiah sort of a ranking. So I sort of tried to compile all of those. Mm-hmm. To see what's realistic, but as we do every year, you create your list of what Howie has done the last few years. So I think, you know, the last year, the year before with Jordan Davis, and 2021 with Devontae Smith, and 2019, you know, 19, 21, 22, and 23. That's what, 4 out of the last 5 years they've made trades, whether it's back and then up or just up. Mm-hmm. They've only stayed put once, really. You want to count Nolan Smith, but that's sort of an extra pick, I would think. Like, you know, they got that pick in a trade and didn't package anything to trade up or trade back. So I don't necessarily count Nolan Smith as, you know, this is their one and only and highest pedantic, first round pick.
Nolan Smith was their pick. Jalen Carter was the one they traded for. That was the
right. So,
but yeah, I understand what you're saying.
Right, like, I got this message. But anyway, so Carter that
pick, like, you're kind of like, I'm good and I'll see what comes to me.
Yeah, right. And the only one they stayed put on in the last 5 years since 2017, which, you know, so I guess I should just say since 2017, they've stayed put twice And in 2017, at 14, they drafted Derek Barnett. And in 2020, at 21, they drafted Jalen Reagor. So staying put has not panned out too well for Howie. You could say that's 50-50 with Derek Barnett having the Super Bowl. I guess that was his rookie year. So, you know, one good year, you win a Super Bowl. The pick worked out. Didn't work out over the career, whatever you want to, however you want to say. I mean, he had a good year in Houston last year from what I could tell, or a few good games. So anyway, in the last, you know, seven-ish years, they've stayed put twice and it hasn't really panned out. So I think you can expect a trade up or a trade down. Just the percentages that you have, they traded up 35%. Nine times in Howie's tenure, and they traded back or back then up five times. So 14 times they've made a move, 12 times they haven't.
Yeah, basically a coin flip.
I think that's why we can look at guys that are projected at 13 or 15 or 18 or 19, because if there is a lineman that can be Lane's future or the Eagles' future right tackle, I think they will make that trade. All right, an hour into the pod, you want to get into specific guys? I think we both agree offensive line is probably the biggest, so why don't we start with that?
Yeah, so I agree. I think that makes sense. So the lay of the land for tackles, I'm going to go through some names. You tell me if there's any guys you want to include here, and then we can kind of dig in. So I'll just go down the list in the order that Dane Brugler has them in his rankings. So at the first, we can probably take this guy off the board, but just for reference, Joe Alt from Notre Dame, he's kind of the consensus tackle number one, and he's probably going to go in the top 10, so like not even really worth talking about. But
he's not on my list.
Right. He's just like, it's worth saying his name.
But I have
consideration set.
These are just tackles?
Well, there's a lot of versatility in here, so these are guys who I think could play tackle at some point. So it'll include guys that played tackle in college but might project as a guard, or some teams might have them as guards and maybe they're tackles. So kind of guys who are not centers, essentially. So Joel at the top.
So I have... Oh, go ahead.
Sorry. No. What do you got?
Just to not go through the full Brugler list, I'm not sure how many guys you want to go through, but I have four names that are in that 15 to like 22 range at tackle or tackle guard. So maybe I'll just list those four, and then, or I guess I have five linemen, so I only have one, like, guard. So why don't I list those, and then you tell me if any of them are on your list.
Yeah. Let's do it.
So this is, I'll go in Brugler's order on a potential draft slot. So Brugler has at 12, Olu Fashanu, tackle out of Penn State. Field Yates has him the 14th on his big board. Jeremiah has him 15th. Brugler has him being drafted first round, 12th overall. I think this is definitely a reach. They'll have to trade up to get him.
I have him kind of like Joe Alt, where it's like he's not as off the board, but like he's in a similar camp where it's like it kind of feels right. Like wishful thinking. Like, I'm not sure.
He's the highest end tackle that they could go up and get, I think.
Yeah, but I think of that
just
rate,
outside probably,
you're absolutely like that might take your 50 and 53 to move up. Maybe that's too rich, but like that's kind of the distance, or that's probably the capital it would take to make a move like that from 22 to get him. So I think it would be
Right.
rich, but yeah, he's on the board.
So another high pick, I have JC Latham. I have him as an O lineman out of Alabama because he can play guard or tackle. Brugler has him 13. Jeremiah has him 18 on his big board. I think he would definitely be a trade up candidate. Again, if it's nice that they're kind of this draft is deep in that middle 10 to 20 or 10 to 15 range. If they're gonna make a big splash to move up, they have Fashanu or Latham as options. Closer to 22, I have Talese Fuaga, offensive tackle, Oregon State. Brugler has him going 17th overall, so that would be moving up 5 spots. Amarius Mims, tackle out of Georgia. Of course, we know how much the Eagles like Georgia. Brugler has him at 19 overall. Field Yates is he's 26 on Field Yates's big board. He seems to be a great project, and I think if they really project him to be like a stellar tackle, it would make sense to draft him. He's not ready now. I think if they drafted him, they would really have to rely on Tyler Steen and Mims to kind of like go in and out and see how who can stick this year. So that's a bit of a risk and a projection. And then finally, a guard prospect, Troy Faltanu from Washington. Brugler has him going 9th overall, so this would be a trade up. But ESPN, a couple different analysts have him 13 or 18. Daniel Jeremiah has him 11th overall on his big board, so that would be a trade up. I think if the Eagles think these guys are going to be Eagles for 10 years, they may move up for these guys. And I guess just as a extra, like if they want to trade back or stay put, Tyler Guyton, tackle out of Oklahoma. Brugler has him going 27th overall. Seems to be a guy that will probably be there. They could even maybe trade back and get an extra like fifth or sixth or something and draft it like 27 or 26 or 27. So those are kind of my guys. Who they could trade up for, who might be around there, but most of these guys are definitely trade ups.
Yeah, so I have all the guys I have one more guy that I think is worth mentioning, and I don't think he's been talked about in this group, but I did hear Ben Solak of The Ringer mention him, and that's Graham Barton. He is an offensive lineman from Duke. Most people have him ticketed as a center in the NFL, but I think he's like 6'5", and that traditionally is like too tall to be a center. And at Duke, he was like five position versatility, so he kind of bounced all along the line. Now for the Eagles, I think he would be more of a long-term guard. And I think even Daniel Jeremiah said like in a pinch he could be a tackle, but like maybe if you had a vision, like I think with a Stoutland, like I think he's the type of guy that like if they were sold on him, like I think he could potentially work as the guard of the now and the tackle of the future. Now I think that's like that's not the wisdom of the crowd here. Like most people have him a center or a guard, not so much a tackle, but he's a guy worth mentioning. And for the other guys, like how I'm kind of bucketing them, I already mentioned Joel and Fashanu, like those are kind of like the wishful thinking, like unless they start falling and you gotta trade up, like they're not gonna be an Eagle. And then the three guys who I think are like the sweet spot for the Eagles as far as positional needs, so these three I think would hit that guard of the now, tackle of the future, and they're all kind of like in similar ranges. Like, it's interesting. Faltanu from Washington, he's the oldest of the group. He's 23 and a half, so he's got like 2 years on the others. I don't know if that, like, I do think that kind of dampens the prospect appeal of like, all right, this guy's like almost 24, like he's probably already hit his ceiling before he takes a snap in the NFL, and like projectability. But Daniel Jeremiah really likes him. Brugler really likes him. Like, I think that's a good sign. But also J.C. Latham and Tyleus Fuaga from Oregon State. It seems like Latham's probably the best of that group. Like, I think he's probably got, like, the best NFL projection. And the other guys are, like, more kind of skilled rather than as, like, athletic and prototypical size, especially if you're projecting them as a tackle in the future. But like, those are the three guys that have that positional versatility. Mentioned Graham Barr, and he's kind of in that group, but he might just be off the Eagles board if they're thinking tackle of the future. And then as far as projects with upside and like strictly tackle, Mims and Gutton. So I think those are like of the group. What would be your favorite pick, taking out the wishful thinking prospects? Like, who would you be most excited to have at 22, or we'll even say like somewhere between 18 and 22?
I think I like Latham. He's 20 now, I think.
He's 21.
Turning 20.
21.2.
Turning 21.
Sorry, it's like 21 and a quarter.
And, yeah, and he's versatile at right guard or right tackle if they're two positions of need. Mims was limited in college. I don't know. I guess you can find you know, issues with all these guys. Yeah. They're all projects. But I think if they traded up, I just think offensive line is such a bigger priority for them than corner, so that it would take them out of any of these top corners. I would trade up for a lineman over a corner. We'll, I guess, get into corner next. Mm-hmm. But I really think if they could package a second and 22 to move up for either Fashanu, Faltanu, or Latham, I'd be perfectly fine with that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Considering they have 50 and 53.
Uh-huh.
And then we can, you know, look at second round corners. But
yeah.
I think those are my top three. Mims, I would be hesitant about. I would probably want them to, I know Brugler has him going 19, but I'd probably want them to at least stay put, if not trade back a bit. I don't know, with limited snaps and being a massive project.
Yeah.
For a first round pick, it's a risk.
Fran Duffy was mentioning Mims, like what he sees is like Jordan Mailata on the other side. Like, physically, he could be that guy, and like that would be so cool to have like those two mounds on either side of your line. But like, that's like, he's got the upside. He doesn't, and like with the upside, like the other side of that coin is like, he just doesn't have the playing experience that a lot of these other guys have. But like, you know, I think in the first round, like, upside is probably what you value, but he doesn't have that guard versatility. Like, he's a true tackle. How do you feel about like the conversation regarding like their contenders now, or how do you feel about spending a pick on a guy whose only path of viability is like likely 2 years down the road minimum, barring injury, of course.
I think, well, specifically at right tackle, I'm okay with that, because I would expect Lane, who said he has a few good years left, you know, a few, if that's three, you know, at least next year and the year after.
The price of responsibility, like, you know, it sucks, but, like, you don't want to be caught without one. And I think if with the upside like that, like, I'd be happy with that. So I like Mims a lot. But like I said, I think the sweet spot is that guard tackle versatility. So, like, I'm on the same board. Like, Latham looks good. Faltano and Fuaga. It is interesting. So real quick on Faltano, there's reports that, like, at the combine, Stoutland's, like, doing the drills with the offensive linemen. And, like, he was, like, really working with Faltano. And, like, it sounded like he was, like, in love with him. And, like, I don't know. He's 2 years older than pretty much, like, everybody on the board with the exception of Fuaga. I don't know how much that really, like, nicks him, but it is worth considering, or at least mentioning. And then with Fuaga from Oregon State, not thought of as like the pipeline for NFL players, but obviously Isaac Seumalo, right? I think
it was very good.
Yeah, it is kind of funny that like that's his kind of connection, like those two talk, and like it is a small school, but yeah, I think like there's a lot of names here, and I think the amount of quality options is a good thing, because maybe that's a reason to not trade up. Like, you kind of are happy is there.
If they like Mims and they think in 2 years he'll be elite, I'm okay that they draft a tackle only, or if they draft a guard and only guard. I just think that they have to really be confident, and like this guy will solve this position for, you know, 5 to 10 years. Mm-hmm. I mean, 10, I guess, is like a lot, but, you know, I'll say 3 to 7. Let's say 3 to 7.
Yeah.
So I'm okay if they draft a guy who's not versatile, but I just think because they're coming into a time where they need the right side of the line, both positions, it's a lot nicer to be like, oh, well, this guy could stick it either, and then you have to, or we could stick him at guard while you have Lane, and then see, like, where he develops. So I think they're in a good spot now with Lane this year and hopefully next year, and then they can, you know, figure it out from there. So let's move on to corner. I have 4, and some are wish list guys, some are not.
Mm-hmm.
Let's go with the wishiest of the wish list as far as Brugler goes. Terry and Arnold, cornerback out of Alabama. Jeremiah has him 9th on his big board. Brugler has him going 10th overall. Top corner in the draft for Brugler, I believe. He's, you know, from a SEC school, I think, what I've also seen is, from Alabama, Kool-Aid McKinstry, Brugler has him going 30th overall, Mel Kiper has him 8th on his big board. Those two Alabama corners, I think Kool-Aid has like a lot of upside. Cornerback 1 potential, very athletic. I think Terrion Arnold seems to be, from what I could tell, more ready to kind of slot in there. It would be a pretty big trade up situation, which I don't see the Eagles doing for a corner, but I had to put him on the list in case he falls and that becomes a potential option. They haven't had a number one corner that they've drafted that can just, like, you know, be there for a number of seasons in a long time. So if they change their organizational philosophy, I guess he could be someone that if the trade's right, they trade up for. I think the more realistic reach type person is Quinyon Mitchell out of Toledo. Brugler has him going 11th overall. He's sort of in that 13 to 15 range as far as big boards go for some of the national reporter guys. He's a quarterback one, cornerback one potential. And then I have Nate Wiggins out of Clemson. Brugler has him going 24th overall, so that could be a stay put pick or a move back. And same with Cooper DeJean out of Iowa. Cooper DeJean seems to be more versatile, can play nickel, can play outside. I think that versatility makes him more enticing, especially if they stay put at 22. I would think he would be there. If they draft either DeJean or Wiggins at 22, it could be a bit of a reach. And I guess before I said reach as a reach to trade up, but this would be a reach to pick them too early. So these corners are late first round, early second round type guys, DeJean and Wiggins. So I sort of have a trade up guys and then possibly trade back a spot or two or just take them at 22 guys. So out of Alabama, Terrion Arnold and Kool-Aid McKinstry, Quinyon Mitchell out of Toledo, Cooper DeJean, Iowa, and Nate Wiggins, Clemson.
Yeah, so I have the same five guys and how I've bucketed them. Like Terrion Arnold, Quinyon Mitchell, I just don't think they're going to be there, even in like the trade up territory. So like their consensus CB1, CB2, just don't think they're going to be there. Nate Wiggins, he's kind of the next guy. It seems consensus or relative consensus between him and Cooper DeJean on who's like the third guy. Now I'll say for Nate Wiggins, he's been a popular mock recently for the Eagles, but it's worth mentioning. I think he's like 170, so like he is light. Most of these cornerbacks, like these other cornerbacks, Arnold, Mitchell, McKinstry, I think even DeJean, they're all like 25 to 30 pounds heavier, and like he is younger. He's at least a year younger than a few of these guys. He's about a year younger than Kool-Aid. He's more than a year younger than Quinyon Mitchell, so like maybe he's got a little bit more frame left to build out, but he's just like slimmer, slender. He's, and I know that the Eagles drafted DeVonta Smith and like he's proven out to be a successful exception, but there's some risk there and just like how he can kind of withstand the toll of the NFL. So I think it's something that might knock him down. And honestly, like Cooper DeJean, I would probably have preference over Nate Wiggins. You mentioned his versatility. He could even be like a safety. Honestly, like I think you would really prefer him to be a successful like cornerback more so than a safety, but like it's nice to know that he has flexibility in his game, especially in a secondary where if you really like Ringo, there's nothing to stop DeJean from being a safety out on the field at the same time. So like that's not to say that you shouldn't draft him because of that versatility. Like I think the versatility is a bonus, and I've even seen some things like he's got like good like return experience, so like maybe there's like some bonus on him contributing immediately with the new kickoff return rules. And then I'd even have like Kool-Aid McKinstry over Nate Wiggins. Now I wasn't sure if you were mentioning McKinstry and Arnold in like the same sentence because they're both from Alabama, but going by Brugler and Jeremiah's rank, they both have him as cornerback five off the board. But I was so like a third thing that I was looking at, obviously we're looking at Brugler's beast, Daniel Jeremiah's rankings, like those are two great spots to start like digging into the draft. But I was also looking at Bleacher Report's their like scouting department draft stuff is like pretty good, and they have like a grading scale on like a 10-point grading system. And so they had Terry and Arnold like an 8.5, same with Quinyon Mitchell, and then Nate Wiggins 7.5, Cooper DeJean 7.7. And I was interested in Kool-Aid McKinstry, 8.4. So I think he could, Kool-Aid McKinstry could, I think, jump potentially Nate Wiggins or Cooper DeJean. I think of the group, like the sweet spot I'm looking at is definitely DeJean or McKinstry. Now, I wouldn't be disappointed in Wiggins, but like I said, there's concerns over like his size and like can he hold up to bigger wide receivers. Like, there's always concerns of like getting out muscled. Now, Darius Slay is like slimmer than most, so he's obviously very quick, Nate Wiggins. So what he lacks in size, he makes up in speed, but obviously that becomes a concern going up against a lot of, is CeeDee Lamb just going to be able to like box him out whenever he wants? So I would say of cornerbacks, I would be happy with DeJean. McKinstry, I think, is interesting, and then to a lesser extent, Nate Wiggins. But I would be very happy with them taking cornerback at one. I think it's a more direct path to a rookie contributing on a contending team, but that's not to say I don't think taking a tackle in the first round. Like, I see the merit in both. And like I said, it's good to have those options so you're not like forcing something.
Yeah, I have those three as well. Let's move on to edge because I got to get out of here soon. I have four guys. One is a massive trade up, but I'll say him anyway. Dallas Turner out of Alabama. Brugler has him going 14th. I believe it was Brugler's. He's Brugler's number one edge in the draft. Three other ones. I have Chop Robinson out of Penn State. Brugler has him 20, going 26th overall. Mel Kiper has him 9th on the big board. Field Yates 18, Jeremiah at 21. So sort of that latter half of the first round, except for Mel Kiper.
Man, some of these Mel Kiper things are wild.
I know he seems to be like all over the place, so I didn't really
Is he like
factor him
I
in
know he's a
for.
very visible draft guy, but like I don't know how much like respect he
No one
has
goes back
within
and like checks work. Like I wonder how wrong he is every year or how right he is. Anyway, my other two, Jared Verse out of Florida State. Brugler is him going 20th in the first round. Jeremiah's in 14th on his big board. Field Yates 22, so that seems very feasible. Jared Verse and Laiatu Edge out of UCLA. Brugler is him going 22nd overall, which is the Eagles' pick. Field Yates has him 16, and Mel Kiper has him 22 on his big board. So, you know. More reasonable. The only thing about Latu is he's 23 and he has had an injury history. But those are my top four edge: Dallas Turner, Latu, Jared Verse, and Chop Robinson.
Yeah, so I have the same four here. We're on the same page for all these groups, it seems. Yeah, Dallas Turner, I think he file him away in wishful thinking. He's like the prototypical edge. Jared Verse, it seems he's like close, if not in the same territory. Like, I think he's kind of like the 1B to Dallas Turner's 1A. Now, it's worth mentioning that he's up there in age too. He's almost 23 and a half. But I think he's a good player. Latu, he like, I don't know how much you dug into his injury history, but like he like medically retired in college and then he came back. But he also is like, he's got like very refined skills. Like, he's kind of like a pass rush technician. And you mentioned the age. He's about, well, Verse and Latu are 2 years older than Turner and Robinson, roughly. Chop Robinson, I think he's kind of a similar prototype to Nolan Smith in that he didn't have the like gaudy production numbers in college, but like he has the tools and he has the projectability to being a good edge rusher down the road. And like ultimately, I would say this group, I have like a much foggier interest level and also kind of a foggier understanding of how these guys will get drafted. Like, I think roughly Turner first makes sense, but it also seems like Latu could probably have the most year one effect for a team. But like, I don't know, some team could be really into the projectable traits of Chop Robinson. But that's all to say, I would probably be the lowest on them taking an edge rusher. Generally, it's thought of as a weaker class, especially in comparison to tackle and cornerback. So I don't know how you kind of like, once you like kind of mix these three position groups, I would probably just have like the edge rushers as like lower priorities. How about you?
Yeah, I definitely would probably prefer an O lineman just for safety and investment moving forward. And if they don't work out, then you at least have lane for another year, hopefully. And then corner, I mean, they have two old corners as their starters, and I'm not sure that I trust their young later round picks like Kelee Ringo and Isaiah Rodgers is a question mark. So I think those are two positions of need that both satisfies short term and long term. So I would definitely prioritize those two. Edge. Yeah, I think if they drafted an edge guy as a project or some of the older ones, if they can contribute now, you're losing Brandon Graham next year. I think it makes sense if you could get like 4 or 5 good seasons out of a Jared Verse or Latu, that's a plus. I don't think that's a waste on a first round pick, but ideally you're drafting the next cornerstone of your team, who can be on the team for the foreseeable future. So I'm not sure drafting an edge player, I would expect a 3, 4, maybe 5 year productive period, and then after that, like, who knows? So yeah, definitely not as deep. Just to wrap up, any other positions, or just bucket all the rest of the positions, any players stand out to you, just quickly?
No other positions of interest, especially for 2022, or sorry, for pick 22. And I know you might have a few, but actually, I think right before we wrap, we should do like a 30-second draft of like the two or three guys a piece we think the Eagles will end up picking. So I know you have like maybe a thing or two, but let's wrap up on that after that.
Yeah, as far as a couple just receivers, I don't think they'll draft a receiver at 22, but Brian Thomas Jr. out of LSU or Adonai Mitchell out of Texas, those are both like late first round guys. If they want a more solid wide receiver three option, but I don't see that really happening, especially signing Paris Campbell and having the DeVonta Smith
Yeah, I completely
contract coming
forgot
up.
about
But
Paris Campbell.
yeah, as far as a draft, I'll just draft one from each position, and then I guess you can as well. I'll say for lineman, Amarius Mims, corner, Kool-Aid McKinstry,
Man,
and edge, Chop Robinson.
this isn't a draft. You're just taking the
Okay. Well, you can pick the same.
Well, I do like where your mind's at for Mims and Kool-Aid. I think those were guys that I was gonna go, but in the interest of being interesting, I will pick different guys. So for tackle, let's say Fuaga, the
Okay.
guard tackle out of Oregon State. For cornerback, I'm gonna go with Cooper DeJean out of Iowa, and then for edge, I feel like Turner now versus like I hate to double up, but I just think Chop Robinson's like the only thing that seems realistic slash somewhat logical. So there you have it.
All right.
12 days.
There
We'll
you
see.
have it. We'll see. 12 days. If any massive thing happens, we might try to squeeze in a pod, but this has been our 2024 draft preview, and I guess this marks our third season.
Yeah, let's say that's
Fourth
true.
season. Fourth season. Because our first podcast was the draft going into Jalen Hurts' first year as a starter.
Wow.
So thus concludes our third season, and now we're into our fourth.
Time flies.
Time flies. I think episode 150 is around the corner, so
Damn.
we'll announce that in a few. I guess it'll be a few months because we record less often in the off season, but we're only a few pods away from 150, so
Crazy.
we're getting up there. All right. Well, for Mike, I'm Ian. Thanks for listening.